Felicity and the Sweetest Girl. And you're listening to Clear Spot on Resonance 104.4 FM, presented by Baggage Reclaim. And I'll just tell you again who's in the studio. It's Richard Sanderson, that's me presenting. I'm here with Lindsay Irvin and Hello. Green Gartside from Scritti Politti, and we're talking about, well, we're basically following the kind of trajectory that Scritti took. And obviously, we went there from Scritlock's Door, which is possibly one of the most brutal tracks that you recorded, to The Sweetest Girl, which is not that long afterwards. I mean, a couple of years, perhaps. But
I'm not sure it was even years, was it?
Possibly not, but anybody that was listening would have been struck by the huge difference in those tracks.
Well, I guess I bore pretty quickly, you know. I'm boring you now pretty quickly. I tire rather quickly, and is what I meant to say. And I can remember that the time that I wrote The Sweetest Girl, I think the two biggest things that I were listening to were Kraftwerk and Gregory Isaacs. And basically that song was, in my mind, Kraftwerk. In fact, through Rough Trade, we approached Kraftwerk and Gregory Isaacs to see. I didn't want to record the song. I wanted them to do it. And we got a positive feedback from Gregory Isaacs, and nothing at all from Kraftwerk. And when I met Kraftwerk some years later, about 4 years later in New York, they did remember. I went to see Tito Puente.
Oh, marvellous.
With
Kraftwerk.
And my drummer at the time, Fred Marr, was working with them. As well as me, sorry, rambling. And they said, yes, they did remember the approach, but that they hated reggae music. And that's why they turned it down.
Oh, what a shame.
Difficult to argue with, but...
Well, no, at least they were perfectly forthright. Yeah. You know, they like Tito Puente, though, so I don't know what the problem was, but...
Well, they allegedly loved dancing, don't they?
I mean, no, they did. And they had the most expensive bicycles in Manhattan. That's the other thing I can tell you. They're bicycle crazy. Those guys. Sweetest Girl was a development from the from stuff about a year before, and I started to get disaffected with the movement away from melody and harmony, and interested again in pop music, in inverted commas, and that would have been something that heralded that particular trajectory.
Did you find that you had to sort of almost re-educate yourself with pop? I mean, was it an era? Were you a huge pop fan beforehand?
I grew up in South Wales, listening only to pop music, and then the taste drifted leftwards, if you can put it that way, with John Peel. And but I didn't know any black music particularly growing up. I didn't know any funk. I didn't know any R&B. And that was something I came to really through reggae, I think, which was, the listening of choice for punks.
It was indeed, yeah.
That's what we listened to the whole time. And through bands like Culture, who I would still reckon to be one of my favourite bands of all time, who I saw not long ago and they were magnificent. I got into funk and R&B and started to reconsider the business of popular music through the whole black American popular music thing. And I did re-educate myself, but you're quite right. I've gone a long way round agreeing with you. I should have just said yes.
So did that embrace of the sort of musical, I don't know, it's not quite the mainstream, but it's on the way from the very sort of edgy, confrontational sound you had. I mean, did that relate to a sort of shift in your ideological?
I suppose there were a number of reasons for, apart from just getting bored with playing one kind of music, there was also the idea that there was no necessary, conflation between the formal features of a bit of music and its political potential. Mm-hmm. I.e., it wasn't necessarily any more powerful, nasty, difficult, challenging, counter-hegemonic because it was in a funny time signature and somebody was out of tune. I mean,
because that had been what you, that kind of.
Well, I was never that silly, but there was a tradition of what do we call it? Rock in opposition.
Yes, rock in opposition.
Dreadful thing, that kind of self music that was sort of self-consciously. I don't know whether it was Beefheart or wherever it came from that was. that was counter-hegemonic, and it seemed to be always music that was dissonant and angular and awkward, and I came to think that that needn't necessarily be the case, and I think that's possibly to do with the obvious power of political power of a lot of American popular music through the civil rights movement and whatever else, you know.
Yeah, mm. Yeah. And also, of course, you round about this time you moved to New York.
I guess it wasn't long after that. It's funny looking back; it all happened in such a short space of time.
I don't want to scare you, but I just realised today, of course, that Cupid and Psyche, 85.
85.
20 years
20
ago.
Years ago, yeah. Thanks, dude. I think that's something to be quite happy about and proud of. I'll allow myself a moment. Thanks for still being alive. But, around about that time, I'd made my first visit to the States. In fact, before I went to New York, my parents moved to America, and I went to the Southern States, which is where I first heard Roger Troutman, which turned me onto the whole
Zap, yeah,
and through that P-Funk Parliament Funkadelic, which blew my mind. You know, I really had never heard that before. That would have been about, I don't know, 79, 80.
And in its own way, as experimental as Henry Cow.
Oh, absolutely yeah. Extraordinary stuff. You know, and then there was at that point I'd struck up a relationship with the people at Rough Trade, and Jeff Travis came back from New York and paid me some early hip-hop, and I guess within months I went out there to sort of check it out and meet some people, and hip-hop became my new passion.
Well, I'm going to play some now, so this is a Sugar Hill classic, and Sugar Hill certainly at the time was seen mm-hmm. putting out the most exciting records. This is one of my favourites, but I hope you enjoy it too. It's Funky 4 Plus 1, and that's The Joint.
Everybody, we know the real deal. We got golden voices and hearts of steel. The other five MCs, we got to be real. We wanna hear the party people yell, Sugar Hill. So what's the deal?
Sugar Hill.
So what's the deal?
Sugar Hill.
Ooh, that's the joint.
These words we said, we want y'all to hear.
We gonna make a lot of sense.
We gonna make it clear.
We gonna rock this place.
We gonna
do some class.
We gonna do our best.
We gonna make it last.
We got rhymes on the mind.
We got rocking in the heart.
And now the things we do, you can call it art.
And don't you forget,
that's the joint.
Because Little Ronnie C is the melody.
And Keith helped me rock, we sing in harmony.
Because Jeff is the rhythm,
and Kate is the bass.
Shout out, rock, shocking the whole darn place.
And now here's a little story you got to be told.
The party people in the place
got a whole lot of soul.
Then when we on the mic, y'all shocking the house.
And when we all get together, we can turn it out. Now we're in the house, as you can plainly see. Everybody say,
for the ones that are right or wrong. Well, I'm listed in the column that's classified. I can be a nurse and I'm qualified to talk about respect. I won't neglect. My strategy is for you to see, so don't turn away by what I say, cause I'm bad when I'm talking to you. Therefore, fly brothers who could do it too. The party people in the place is just for you. So get down, get on down. I'm the plus one more and I'm going down.
She's the best female in this here town.
And everybody knows that I'm Goldie Brown, and you know
join.
talking you for you, I'm sure to prove. Cause I want a young lady with a lot of finesse that she's got to be on. She's got to be sweet, yes, fine and kind. And that's just the kind of woman I want to be mine. You know, he's a joy. Come on, do it. To the funky time, get funky. With the funky four. To all the young ladies, this is what it means.
Say his name is Keith Keith.
As my rhymes go down, to all the young ladies, just gather around. With the rhymes I possess, the words I protest, and I can put together, I can call it finesse. Now listen up, ladies, and listen up good. I'm gonna rock on the mic like I know I could.
Like I know we should.
And like I know I would.
He's Keith Keith.
I rock the house.
He's Keith Keith.
I rock, sock, rock, turn it out, and you know that.
And he got
the finesse to be hold that.
He's the dog.
Keeping on to the crack of dawn. A party people in the place, you got to keep on. Now if you like the beat and you want some more, scream it out and say funky four.
Funky four.
Plus one more.
And plus one more.
Now you don't stop. You said the beat goes on. It's our power stuff.
We won't stop rocking till you're all getting up.
Ooh, ah,
ooh, ooh,
ah, ah.
Ooh, ah, and don't stop.
Hit it.
That's the joint.
We have an obligation that we must fulfill.
Like a 357, we're out to kill.
Well, I'm Machine Gun Kelly. It's funny and cloud.
We're gonna shock the house and stand tall with dog.
We on top of the world, we're looking down.
We going straight ahead, we never turning around.
Cause we're all so close, but yet so far.
And to all the party people,
you know who we are.
Get the point.
And if you don't, we want y'all to know
we're there.
We're the funky four.
Plus one.
Ho, do it. Get down to the front side.
Come on, you got to get down.
That was the Funky Four Plus One from way back when on Sugar Hill Records, part of the huge 9-minute 12-inch version, of course, which it's looking back now, it seems so strange that how radical that the whole idea of sort of taking a short song like that and stretching it out for sort of 10 minutes scene, but it really was. Lindsay.
Yes, well, I suppose we were getting to the point in your career when you'd left London behind, which must have felt like quite a sort of
felt lovely.
Shock. Yeah. And then you began sort of assembling a new version of Squishy Blizzy. I wonder if you could talk about how
that all came again through Rough Trade and Jeff Travis, who in addition to playing me some of the early hip hop stuff, which kind of tied in with my whole feelings about a move towards this is all very crass to put it this way, but towards pop music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, partly because I didn't like the way that other musics were critically privileged.
Yeah.
You know that that rock and jazz were somehow more worthy, and I didn't like the whole politics behind that. Or the philosophy behind it. And so we got talking about pop music, and Jeff would, you know, played me early Prince stuff, and but before that, the hip hop stuff. And he'd been into New York and bumped into a schoolboy at the time called David Gampson at the offices of Z Records. And David was a schoolboy who was a sort of Anglophile, uh-huh. but loved P-Funk and the rest of it. Jeff heard the one track he did, which was a cover version of the Archie's Sugar Sugar,
right.
in a kind of with one of the brides of Funkenstein singing on it. Anyway, he brought that back and said, "What do you think of this?" I said, "This is the bomb," and he hooked the two of us up, and so that was how I got over to New York for my second visit, and I lived then with David and his parents in upstate New York for a while, and we would come down into town to places like the Mud Club and whatever, and see early Bambaataa gigs and everything else. So it's and the love of hip hop, you know, was something that stayed with me, and it took a long time to. In fact, it never really has found a very agreeable expression in my own music, I don't think. There's always been a difficult influence to express. But
were you conscious of somehow sort of trespassing on a genre that as a white person, you a white musician, you didn't have the right to?
I was much less uptight about that than the two American members of that. At that time, we were joined by a drummer called Fred Marr, who was a New York drummer. He played with Richard Hell and things. But
oh, did he? I didn't know about that. I was aware of his work and material.
He played with Gong when he was like 15. His dad was a jazz journalist.
We all
or
make
something.
Mistakes.
Whoa, no, Gong. You know, enough respect.
Really?
Oh, well, okay. Occasionally. And, so Fred, I think Fred and David were both, as New Yorkers, they were much less comfortable with the idea of directly playing around with hip hop. I mean, they did politically feel that they couldn't go there in a way that I think I would have had a very clumsy and gauche attempt at more obviously early on. But it was what we listened to the whole time, and it was it did make itself felt in the way we went about drum programming and all sorts of other things. But
did you feel that the way that you are now you embracing, if you like, pop music and well, certainly black popular culture, American black popular culture, did it also affect your songwriting in as well as just, you know, the way you...
It affected absolutely everything. It affected my, you know, the way I sang. I didn't sing in the same voice anymore. I didn't use the same chords anymore. Everything was completely turned upside down.
And of course, you were on a major label by this point.
Yeah, by that point, yeah.
Virgin Records.
Well, I'd left the whole indie thing.
That must have lost you a few friends in the Young Communist League. Didn't you sign
well,
up to?
You know, I had both severed my ties at that point, sadly, with the Young Communists. I always thought that, you know, that there were some interesting problems for Marxism theoretically, and the obvious place to discuss them would be in the Young Communists, but of course it was completely wrong. That was the last place anybody really wanted to talk about any problems with Marxism. And I had gotten a little bit tired of the beginnings of indie,
right?
You know, which at that point, for me, already had a number of mannerisms and
well, it became something that something like Topic Records would not feature in the indie charts. Folk music would no longer be in the indie charts, and it was becoming a genre. Indie meant four blokes with guitars.
It did, yes, and not. I mean, there were more strict limitations on really what was acceptably indie, and I think sadly it continues to this day. You know, it spawned this idiot bastard thing that I've never been terribly fond of.
But presumably you're not particularly warming to the sort of revival of the post-punk scratchy guitar sound in current pop music.
Doesn't really do a whole lot for me, having sort of done my bit of it once myself. There are much more, you know, for me there were more exciting challenges and interesting musics that I wasn't familiar with, and places to go and people to meet and things to try.
I suppose it's worth mentioning, off the back of what Lindsay just said there, that there are now bands that are sort of positively name-checking Skritti and the direction that they took. I'm thinking of a group like LCD Sound System, who at times sound like The Fall, but also, very obviously influenced by the whole sort of dance music scene as well, in a quite, authentic way, rather than just sort of sticking dodgy drum machine patterns onto rock records. I think there is a more interesting movement in that area at the moment.
Well, I dare say I'm too blinkered and bigoted to see that. But
let's hear Woodbees, actually, which was your first proper hit, I suppose.
That was the one.
Can we just before we play that just a second, I just wanted to talk about, because originally this was a kind of second go at that record.
Yeah, you're quite right.
Originally recorded with Nile Rodgers of Godlike Chic Genius.
Yes, we did do a... I met Nile pretty early on in New York, and there was a version of this cut with him, and probably tapes of it still exist, but sadly
I didn't, for zillions of pounds on
I didn't
eBay.
Bring one in.
I'd love to make
some money with that.
I'll
swap you really a resident CD for a recording of that. Okay, let's hear this is Woodbees, the first Scritti Politti hit, I think.